Mini episode 1669 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1669. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here. And we have one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my longtime friend and fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, who has taken sort of the lead spot in recent years in doing our football analysis with us here. So this is our pre-mid-season report on the FDH Lounge. And because of the vagaries of the sports calendar, a true mid-season one would fall next week, but we're going to be busy recapping the World Series at that time. So Chris is coming on prior to NFL Week 9, and it's still late enough in the season here to take a look back and see some of the things that have surprised us, have not surprised us along the way. And I know that one of the things, Chris, to jump right into it, that would never surprise us is dysfunction with the Las Vegas Raiders. And as we're recording this morning, dysfunction hits again like an earthquake.
Yeah, Al Davis didn't like what he saw in that last game, clearly, and he just put an end to it. And think about now the Raiders between John Gruden and now McDaniel. He is paying somewhere around $60 to $80 million, depending on the Gruden settlement, for two coaches to not coach his team for the next 4 years.
Exactly. And
that is really bad cash flow for a guy who, outside of the franchise he owns, is not independently wealthy.
Well, what's funny is he had to move to Vegas in the first place because he was cash poor, and it's like he's in Vegas, and like, where's he going to go now? Is he going to move it to the United Arab Emirates? I mean, where can he get more money than he's getting in Vegas? Because he's probably running out of the Vegas money.
Although the Dubai Raiders does sound pretty good.
It does, and I'm sure they would glom onto the team happily. Here's the funny thing in terms of Freudian slips. You initially said Al Davis, and it's late stage Al Davis. It's latter years Al Davis that Mark Davis is channeling. And it's so funny because when he hired John Gruden, everybody thought, oh, he's learned from the mistakes of his father. No, he's late stage Al Davis, just like, so it's true continuity, basically, from where they were in the 2000s and the 2010s, because you look at this, and all he is and again, you look at his Dumb and Dumber haircut, and it's like, could anybody possibly be as dumb as, you know, as he is dumb looking with that haircut? And clearly he is. Because Mark Davis subscribes to, you mentioned those two names there, the great man theory of history. And that's what Rube owners do when they're not talking about a true great man of history. Like, I go back to the 2000s, and I will say that I could look like a hypocrite for saying this, but I'm identifying a true great man of history. I had the theory at the time, if you're the Browns, I was saying this in mid-2000s, you fly down to Key West, you put $50 million in gold bullion in a suitcase on Jimmy Johnson's lap, and you make him say no. That's when $50 million was still a lot in the NFL. And if you're talking about a Jimmy Johnson, okay. I mean, and my point is there's an exception to every rule. But he looks around at these guys. He looks around at a John Gruden and sees a 24-karat gold genius. Same thing with Josh McDaniels. Versus a team like Houston, they hired a guy in D'Amico Ryans, who was a really good defensive first position coach and then coordinator. Houston hired him and said, we think this is a guy that can grow into being a really great head coach. And if you're Mark Davis, you don't do that. You look for the shortcuts. You go sign a wide receiver Adams like they did and throw a ton of money at him, regardless of how he fits into the offense and what you have around him. I mean, it's the Vegas mentality right there, of just throwing money at all of your problems, being a rube as far as thinking that you're hiring a genius coach and everything like that, when the true lesson of how to do team building is right there in town in the form of the Vegas Golden Knights, who, as I said last year when the Stanley Cup Finals started, it's the most un-Vegas franchise you could ever imagine. They're a team that looks like basically beige wallpaper, but it works because they understand team building. And that is a that is a concept that Mark Davis, like late-stage Al Davis, will never grasp.
Well, yeah, and I will, just to let, you know, a little bit of Mark Davis off the hook a little bit, you know, he's not the only owner that goes for the big names, the big splash, the coach. You know, we've had Houston went ahead and tried the whole, hey, let's get the Belichick coaches and hire them, right? Yes. I mean, a lot of these guys have fallen into that trap. Now, at least Bill O'Brien got the Houston to the playoffs a couple times. I mean, so it wasn't a complete bust, but he was terrible as a GM. Not horrible as a coach, but awful as a GM.
Yeah.
You know, look, I was never in favor of the Gruden hire. I thought that was terrible. That proved to be bad. You know, I hated the McDaniels hire. And boom. You know, it's a lot like what I think Kraft is going to deal with in New England now that we're starting to hear the echoes of what I've been saying, which is, you know, it wasn't Belichick, it was Brady. And that Belichick's record without Brady is below 500.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all the Browns fans that want to run Kevin Stefanski out of town, he has a better record as a coach without Tom Brady than Bill Belichick does. And so at some point, there's going to be a realization about this. And, you know, if New England is going to purge, you know, potentially Bill out of New England, then, you know, will this put an end to the McDaniels failure again, put an end to the whole Belichick tree in terms of franchises looking to poach from it? I would suggest yes. Because we've seen failure after failure after failure.
Yeah, and that's where, again, we can't say it too often on this show. If it happens, you called it first. You've been saying for well over a year, maybe about 2 years, that Belichick could be on the slide, could be slipping on that banana peel in New England if things don't get turned around. And, again, they have looked truly putrid at times this year. We said coming into the year they'd finish last in the AFC East just by dint of being in a brutal division, but boy, they'd be last in a lot of divisions in football right now. They'd be last in any of the other divisions in the AFC with that record, and they would be at least tied for last in the NFC East and the NFC North right now. They have been putrid. As far as looking at sort of mild surprises here, in the AFC East, in that same division here, you and I both had Miami in the playoffs, but Buffalo winning the division. And it's one of these things where I just feel like I didn't have the guts to make the call at the beginning of the year that it ultimately, although again, Tua, I didn't know if Tua was going to be healthy, and Tua, if he doesn't stay healthy, could make this prediction fall apart. But Miami's looking clearly like the best team in the East. I know they didn't match up well the first time they played Buffalo, and they have to prove they can beat them. But the way that offense is just firing on all cylinders, and the Bills are looking like a team whose sell-by date may have passed at this point, a team that their window's open a couple of years yet to still hang around, but you're left wondering if we haven't seen the best of them in this era.
Well, I don't feel like I picked the Bills to win the division because I also predicted Tua to miss 5 to 6 games,
sure.
Right? So, I don't feel like the prediction was all that far off, right? I mean, we both thought Miami was an up-and-comer. We both thought that they would challenge for the division crown. I thought they would come up short just because Tua would inevitably get hurt. The fact that they're leading doesn't surprise me in any way, shape, or form. I know I kept saying that I expected the Bills to actually regress. Even though I still expected them to win the division, I expected regression and then to hold on just because of I figured Tua couldn't stay healthy. So it does look like if Tua stays healthy that they are going to run away with that division at this point. Buffalo is struggling. Allen is regressing. They are They are not who everybody thought they are. And, I mean, right now they're looking to try to sneak into the playoffs. I think when you project out their second half schedule, you know, they are looking at, the seven seed or something, you know, mm-hmm. they're not looking at some great position to be in. They may end up being the seven seed. So, their schedule doesn't get easier. And, for me right now in the East, it's playing out really how we thought, right? I mean, the Jets would be in third place competing. Of course, I didn't think it would be without Aaron Rodgers, but right. I'll give them credit. You know, they're 4-3. They have held in there.
Yes.
They, according to projections right now, they still have a 29% chance of making the playoffs. It's also clear that Aaron Rodgers is doing whatever he can to try to come back this season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, he's not only hinting at it, he's basically saying it.
Right.
And everyone's like, I can't believe a guy like that age can do this. I'm like, look, we know that there are medical secrets that if you are willing to spend the money, there are ways to improve your healing speed and ability.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of, I don't want to call it dark market, but there's these sort of hyperbolic chambers, specialty infusions at 40,000 feet, like the cyclists used to get.
Yeah.
With their steroids, there's the infusion of, blood from children. And you say, how the what? Yeah, no, that goes on in the world.
Yeah.
If you're willing to spend, and studies have shown lots of crazy stuff like that is regenerative. It will help you heal quickly. So who knows what he's doing?
Yeah.
Is he getting drips in a private plane at 40,000 feet? Is he spending every waking moment getting electrical stimulation on his Achilles and sleeping in a hyperbolic chamber or whatever? Is he getting children blood infusions? I mean, seriously, he's probably doing a lot of that stuff rather than just, quote unquote, doing his rehab.
Well, yeah.
So it looks like he may come back, so the Jets may hang on, and who knows? They might still be in it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, healing with blood from children. Wasn't there an extraction place underneath a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C.? I thought I read something about that on the internet somewhere. But
I'm sure you did.
Yes, yes, that I did. But listen, I think Aaron Rodgers proved during the pandemic that he is the player most likely to Lyle Alzado himself. So, if he wants to go that way, let him go that way. Whatever kind of dark arts are at work here, he is going to be applying that. I'm sure he is applying that. And, in the AFC here.
I know you can't meditate your way to a healed Achilles,
no,
right? So there's other things afoot.
Well, I remember that, Joe Rogan told him to gargle horse piss to get over COVID. I thought I read something about that somewhere. So, there's all kinds of different things here at play. And, again, him and his goofiness, he'll be back in some form or function. And this is the NFL, where you can't necessarily say these things are closely regulated. We're still waiting for the list of what they shot up Patrick Mahomes with at halftime of the Super Bowl last year when he came out in the second half and looked better than he had at any point in the last 6 weeks when he'd been limping around like an old man. So, anything goes, basically. They like to act like it's not the 1970s anymore with the doctors with the hypodermic needles on the sidelines. They like to pretend it's not that, but it is. We know it is. But in looking at the AFC, the poster child for steroids in the 70s, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the luckiest team in the league still. By the way, it's hilarious that the Thursday night game this week, when you're talking about lucky teams here, you've got Mike Tomlin against white Mike Tomlin when it comes to lucky coaches. But the Steelers are at 4-3. That is a bit of a surprise in this AFC North. And we predicted that the North was going to be brutal. I don't know that we predicted that the favorite, Cincinnati, was going to get off to that rough of a start. But in retrospect, they rushed back Joe Burrow, foolishly so. And it's taken until about this time in the season for him to kind of shake that off and get it going here. Baltimore, I think, has outperformed our expectations. They're looking like a legitimate Super Bowl contender at this point in time. The North is just a very, very brutal battle royal at this point and probably will be all throughout the season.
Yeah, the North is as competitive as we thought. Again, I had Pittsburgh finishing 8-9. I'm sticking with that.
Ooh.
You know, their whole, you know, that win over Cleveland was so unlikely.
Yeah.
In the way that game broke down. You know, they have no offense. I mean, just, you know, they can't make that thing work. O-line is not great. Pickett is not getting it done. They're 4-3, and I just go, how? But their schedule's not going to be easy down the stretch. And I think that they will, you know, they'll hit the mean in what I expected. You know, I give all the credit to Baltimore. I did not think that the whole Todd Monken, you know, throwing it outside the numbers down the field offense would work. And oh, wait, guess what? That's not how they're winning.
That's right.
They're winning by Lamar Jackson's legs still. But it's working, right? I mean, they just find a way to win. Solid defense. Lamar Jackson makes whatever ridiculous, impossible play that needs to be made to save the 3rd and 14. You know, whatever. They just find a way. And I just got, I'll tip my cap to them. I mean, I hate it. Because it shouldn't be working other than the supernatural ability of that guy to run around a field and make something happen.
Yeah.
And so they're getting it done, and they are legitimate. You know, they're probably at this point going to win the North because everybody else is currently at 4-3. Cincinnati, to your point, is looking a lot better with Burrow healthy. They're going to surge. And then, you know, you have Cleveland where I expect them to win this week against a Arizona team that is really trying to throw in the towel now. And, you know, then it's Pittsburgh coming to town. So even the Browns, with sort of their struggles at quarterback, with the 31st ranked quarterback room, you have the number one ranked defense and the number two ranked special teams, is still finding a way to win some games, right? If Watson can come back, Cleveland is still going to win some games down the stretch. If you look at that schedule, you know, my prediction was 10-7, and I think they're on pace for that and probably, you know, probably right around the 7th seed and probably playing your Dolphins in the first round.
That was my initial prediction, but I'm reconsidering it. A couple things here. I'm going to go back to Baltimore for a second and then touch on the Browns. Part of our – when we do our – updates on fantasydrafthelp.com during the season here, our ultimate statistic, where we're bringing a bunch of different statistics together and basically putting them in a blender here. A couple of the ones that are always very, very useful are off of Pro Football Reference, some of their proprietary stats there as far as the formulas. So we don't know how they come up with it, but their power ranking formulas, SRS, and then the OSRS and DSRS, they add those together to get the SRS. Baltimore, with the leading defense in the league by a wide margin on DSRS, 8.0. They're 4.5 on offense, a 12.5 overall grade, which makes them the best in the league by a decent margin. You've got San Francisco then at 10.6 overall, Dallas at 9.7. So before I get to the Browns, I would guess that you're somewhat surprised to hear those numbers for Baltimore, Chris.
I am, actually. Yeah, very surprised.
Yes. But that's what the numbers are showing according to the Pro Football Reference formula. On the Browns, I'm just going to say this. As somebody who, I think I had them at 10-7. I think I had them in the 7th seed. I had them losing to in the first round to Miami. Maybe I had them as the 6th seed. I don't remember which, but I had them going out in the first round. So maybe it was losing at Kansas City. I don't remember. But anyways, this is where I think I went wrong on this, and this is where I should know better living in this town, is that you look at it in the off season. I mean, there are two different Cleveland Browns scenarios every year. There's the off season, and then when the season starts. Unfortunately for the Cleveland Browns, what counts is when the season starts. So you look at everything on paper in the offseason, and I think that's a trap. Because in looking at this again, what Jim Schwartz has done with this defense is, it should be no surprise, because he's one of the best defensive minds in the league, and Joe Woods is one of the very worst. By the way, I was told by local talk show radio a couple of weeks ago that this was the equivalent of the 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens. Of course, that was before Indianapolis and Seattle did what they did to this defense. So you might want to pump the brakes on one of the greatest defenses of all time. But they're one of the best defenses in the league this year, and we could see that. But the thing with the Browns, this is the off-season trap. You get into the season, there will be, at some point, you don't know exactly where, there will be malignant toxicity coming out of Berea. And it'll take some form or function, and you won't have any idea ahead of time what it's going to be. This year, it's Deshaun Watson's shoulder, which, I mean, the funny thing is, I loathe the guy personally. It's the reason that I'm, a Browns fan in exile and have been for the last 2 years. I actually see where he's coming from better than most people do. Because, again, I've always held you're a detriment to the team if you can't go at full strength. And, again, you want to be healthy down the stretch. So I get it. But the funny thing is, all the people who overlooked everything the guy did in his personal life, which was truly abhorrent, are now on him because they think he's jaking a shoulder injury. It's like the toxicity will come out in every year, Chris, and we don't know ahead of time where it's going to be, but once the season starts, it comes out of Berea like a thick, poisonous fog.
Yeah, I think that that's a function of, it's gotten worse because of social media. I was actually thinking about this earlier today.
Okay.
Because somebody was commenting on, yesterday I was listening to something, there might have been 5 minutes of talk radio in Cleveland, and, you know, someone was talking about this very thing, like, the Cleveland fans are always so negative, 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 they just always assume the worst, and I'm like, listen, that's true. Brown's Twitter is awful, right? They do assume the worst, and like, the theory that, like, Watson is just tanking it now for the paycheck, it's like, the guy went out there to try to play at Indy because he wants to play. Like, can we stop trying to make up narratives?
Sure.
All right? He's hurt, and when Stefanski saw him out there, not able to drive the ball, and he got hit, Kevin made the right decision to pull the plug in that moment, right? We went a whole season of him refusing to do that with Baker Mayfield, despite Baker insisting
yes.
on playing.
People forget that.
And so Kevin made the right decision, and he said, nope, you don't have it, you're not right, I'm getting you out of there. Watson wasn't out there for any other reason than the guy wants to play. He wants to play with his teammates, right? So that whole narrative's nonsense. But coming back to your discussion about the toxicity in Cleveland, it's what losing does, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it permeates inside the clubhouse at some point. But the fan base for Cleveland is so wrecked with PTSD. And having 30 years of just shit dumped on them by the franchise,
yep.
that they are jaded. They are negative. They have poured themselves into a team and a franchise that has given them nothing back. And some people will be like, well, you know, it's been a few years. No, 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 no. 30 years of garbage. Like, I understand why Browns fans are negative and toxic and assume the worst. I absolutely get it. Because other than maybe the Lions, right, no fan base has had to put up with such losing and nonsense and garbage and management problems and coaches as clowns and ownership stupidity. I mean, the fans have every right to be jaded, angry, pissy, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately what a guy like Juan Thornhill doesn't get when he shows up here and he encounters all this negativity and he's like, yo, fans, it's all good. We're here, you know? Like, I don't get the negativity. And it's like, Juan, God bless you. You know, you haven't been here for it.
Yeah.
You know? And I know you're like, it's a new season. We're a new team. It's like, the roster is 45% new guys. Like, you can't apply what happened in 06 to what's going on now. You're right, Juan. That is a rational approach, except these fans have put up with 30 years of garbage, and they're just mentally hurt badly. And so I get it, right? And yeah. So I think that's actually the biggest thing, challenge that Stefanski faces this year, right?
Yeah.
With this shoulder injury, is keeping this thing on the tracks, keeping that locker room together. And I got to tell you, other than the Kareem Hunt whining the other day about how he didn't get the ball in the fourth quarter, look, I wanted them to run the ball in the last 4 minutes, just go jumbo package and keep running it, right? Like, I disagree with the decision-making there.
Right.
You know, I thought it was Stefanski's best game this year, and then the last 4 minutes, he kind of went brain dead, okay? But I don't think there was any issue with Kareem Hunt not being in there because Ford and Strong were running the ball real well. So which running back it was, to me, was irrelevant, right? So all these people were like, they should have had one in there, give it to him. No. Any running back would have done. Those all three guys were doing well that day. Kevin, at that moment, should have realized that P.J. Walker has a propensity to make a boneheaded decision in a critical moment.
Yeah.
That's the whole reason not to call that pass play. Not to call it. It was, there was a guy open. There was, yeah. But he's not the quarterback to get that done. That's why you go jumbo and you just run it.
Yeah.
All that being said, I actually really do think Stefanski's done overall a really good job this year in a tough situation. You know, say what you will, they're 4-3. They basically had their, you know, their franchise quarterback, quote unquote, for like two games. They lost right tackle one. They lost left guard one. They lost running back one in the entire league. You know, they've suffered. They've had a lot of setbacks on offense. And somehow they are still, you know, just finding a way to be competitive. And look, they should have won that Seattle game. I mean, they didn't. But, you know, you're going to have those in over the course of an NFL season.
Well,
but I think overall, all these people talk about firing Stefanski. I'm like, he's actually been doing his best job in this season since he's been here, in my opinion.
Well, and on the list of losses, they lost wide receiver 2 also for a crummy 6th-round pick. Oh, wait, that was self-inflicted. But, you know.
Well, I mean, the guy had 8 catches on the season.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, no, I think that's a function of quarterback play, right? I mean,
sure.
And so he wasn't getting the ball. And if you're Andrew Berry, you're like, fine, I'm not paying him next year. They weren't going to. That became pretty clear by this point. And so, you know, there was no contract. There was no contract extension. He was barely getting the ball. He wasn't going to be here next year, right? So I'm kind of like, I don't love it, but I also kind of just go, eh. I mean, he was on his way out of town anyway.
Typical smart mark slave to analytics thing. A 6th-round pick. A 6th-round pick ain't crap. You're drafting an XFL guy, Chris. You'd rather have an XFL guy than this guy in this allegedly make-or-break play.
This is a playoff year.
They're making a playoff push this year, Chris, I'm told. I'm told they're making a playoff push this year. Boy, imagine how worked up I'd be if I still cared. I mean, that's so stupid.
Well, I think that they feel like it's those snaps are going to go to Tillman now, so we'll see.
Well, they
got a 6th-round pick for a guy who was a 6th-round pick.
Yeah. Well, and Andrew Berry gloated for a couple of years about what a great value that was, and all he could get was another 6th-round pick for him. Well done.
Well, at this point, because he had no numbers for this year, you weren't going to get anything for a guy that there was no new contract after this year.
Typical Browns create a hole, fill a hole. They drafted Tillman in the 3rd round when they already had a wide receiver, too. So, you know, you get rid of one and you use a 3rd-round pick there. So, I don't know.
Well, I will see. You know, there's certainly a lot of people that think Tillman's going to be a better wide receiver than Peoples-Jones. Peoples-Jones had some great moments. I mean, there's no doubt. You know, I was a big fan. But, you know, whatever the reason, he wasn't producing this year.
Oh, and look, and again, I'm a Tennessee honk. I'd like to see Tillman do well personally. But all these things, you know, go back to whenever I tell people that, you know, my 4th favorite season since the Browns came back behind 2007 and 2002 was last year. Because being free of everything, having it be water off a duck's back, that makes it my 4th favorite season. Because they didn't torture me like they always torture everybody else in town. So, you know, that's what's hilarious about them. You look at the other.
Well, and if you look at the Browns' schedule going forward, the sharp projections still say they have a 49.1% chance of making the playoffs. So that's basically a 50% chance of making the playoffs. They're still sitting at.
Well, but here's the thing too. I can see that because again, you look at the AFC, and I don't think it's as deep as we necessarily thought it was going to be coming into the season. Partially because again, Rodgers isn't there for the Jets. You and I both thought that the Chargers were at least a little bit fugazi, which they've kind of been. I don't think there have been too many surprises looking collectively at the South and the West, outside of the fact that Kansas City, I think they might have got exposed a little bit in the first game. If Kelce goes down, and he being part of one of these, of the most nauseating story of the season here, but if he goes down, they are done. Their wide receiver crop might be bottom five in the league. They really got exposed in the Thursday night opener. Their OSRS, believe it or not, on Pro Football Reference is 0.9 negative. So it's negative 0.9. Their defense is actually a 5.6 for a 4.7 cumulative rating. If you look at the SRS, they're being carried by their defense. I do think that's going to turn around a bit as we go along here, but the West, I think, is not a surprise with the Chargers being a little fugazi, the other teams being also Rams.
Well, I don't think we expected the Broncos to be this bad.
No, but they're 3-5 right now. So I mean, they've been a little bit better recently. In the South, we expected the Jags to win going away, which they are. I said coming into the year, I'm going to take. I don't know if I'll collect my flowers for this one, but at least a few dandelions. I said Houston and Indianapolis, at the very least, were going to be maybe a little bit better than what people thought. And I think that's bearing through. And I said that without even knowing C.J. Stroud was going to do what he's done early on. So
I want to say, I mean, I appear to be very, very wrong about C.J. Stroud. So, you know, I love to take credit when I'm right, and I will acknowledge when I blew it. Because right now, through seven games, it looks like I am very, very wrong about that young man.
He is going to be the real deal. Indianapolis is playing very hard, and they're in just about every game here, and they're doing an awful lot. An OSRS of 7.4, which is remarkable. When you consider that the Chiefs are negative 0.9 and the Colts are 7.4.
Well, Steichen has just done a great coaching job there. He really has.
He has. He has. They are tremendous. And again, not really, I'm not surprised by the progress that they and Houston are making. I don't expect either one of them to necessarily contend for the playoffs, nor the lucky Titans, nor the lucky...
Well, I got to say, in the last game, though, I mean, you know, me calling Will Levis Paxton Lynch Part 2, I might be wrong on that one, too.
Yeah, that was, if you want to say Paxton Lynch against the CFL or somebody, that's what Levis looked like in that game there. I don't know that he's going to necessarily keep it up, but man, he made some impressive throws. And, you know, if you can make those
he
throws.
He did. I will give credit. I mean, now again, that's one game. You've seen plenty of guys flash in a game or two.
Yeah.
But, yeah, based on that game, I look quite wrong.
Well, we'll see. I think it's too early to say that you're wrong on that one here. Stroud, again, if he stays healthy, I think he is going to be the real deal. The NFC, I think, probably has less surprises than the AFC. I mean, you look at the East, I don't think we're really surprised by much of anything here. I am going to say that, again, in looking at Washington, who I thought was going to be the stealth, horrible team that nobody saw coming, FDH Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross once said on the show, him being one of the sharps and a professional handicapper, that in a moment of frustration, he once said, they should play the games on the computer instead of on the field. Well, if that were the case, I'd be exactly right about the Washington Commanders, because they'd be 1-7 or maybe 0-8. Their SRS is the worst in the league outside of Las Vegas and Denver. Las Vegas and Denver are both minus 10.3, and Washington is minus 10.2. Minus 2.9 OSRS, minus 7.3 DSRS. That, ladies and gentlemen, is why Chase Young and some of the other guys were available at the trade deadline here. So I was right about Washington in spirit, even if they fluked their way through a soft schedule to a 3-5 record. And outside of that, to me, the West holds no surprises. I thought the Giants were going to collapse largely because Danny Dimes is a fraud, and I was right about that. Oh, by the way, minus 10.7 on the OSRS. So all the Danny Dimes fanboys can throw in the towel, Chris.
I mean, look, Phillies is what I thought they would be. Dallas is nipping at their heels, what I thought they'd be. Mm-hmm. The Giants were going to regress big time, which is what I thought, and they have. Mm-hmm. Last year, I just thought was new coach fluke type of stuff.
Yep.
In Washington was, you know, a team with some talent, but you didn't really believe in that they'd ever put it together. And, you know, not getting into the analytics, I mean, that's what I'm seeing, right? You have one game, they look great, and the next game, you're like, boy, that was garbage. Hot garbage. So I, you know, they're just that type of team. So the East is exactly where we thought it would be. So there's no great storyline there.
Yeah.
You know, the North, you know, looking heading out west a little bit. I mean, I picked the Lions.
Me too.
I had, despite some people having the MVP on Justin Fields and some said they would win the division. I had them last. Chicago was last.
Good call.
So I, you know, it's that division currently sits exactly how I thought it would go. So I, you know, I don't. there's not right now a lot in the NFC. I mean, you go to the South, and I picked New Orleans just because, you know, they're sitting there at 4-4 with Atlanta.
I picked Atlanta just because.
Right. I mean, that was the just because division, right? Mm-hmm. Like, nah, I got to pick somebody.
Yep.
You know, I went New Orleans, you went Atlanta. You know, 8 games in, they're both 4-4. Well, I guess we'll just wait and see how this thing plays out, right?
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
I have a feeling by the end of the season, they're both going to be around 8-8.
Yeah.
And one of them will get in and, you know, I haven't looked at the schedule, but, you know, knowing them, they play in the last week or something.
Probably. And you look,
I think the only surprise for me is out west with Seattle leading that division, but I had them second, so it's not exactly like, you know, shocking.
Yeah.
You know, they got lucky that Cleveland handed them that game. Otherwise, they are in second place.
Yeah.
And you know, San Francisco's going through a rough patch right now. I mean, I still think they're the best team in that division, and it'll, you know, it'll even itself out, and yeah, they'll still end up winning it.
Yeah, and the Rams are going through a tough stretch too. But overall, it's weird to say about a 3-5 team, but they've looked a little better than the people thought that they'd look. And so I think they have.
I've been impressed by the Rams. I mean, there's not a lot of quit there.
No.
I was curious what would happen yesterday going into the trade deadline. They don't look like they're a playoff team, right?
Right.
Would there be a fire sale of some players? And, they, you know, they didn't move anybody.
Right.
So, they're going to stick it out, but they are playing better than I expected. I will say that.
With the complete lack of depth in the NFC, I mean, like I said, in the AFC, you could have a team that's very questionable making the 7 seed. There is a team that will be very questionable as the number 7 seed in the NFC. That's almost a guarantee, and why can't the Rams be that team with the issues that they still have? Going back to a couple of teams here, I'm going to, back in the North, I'm going to take my fall here on the Bears. I was a little bit of a hipster. I picked them to be that questionable team making the 7 seed in the NFC. I was wrong about that. Not as wrong as, I'll twist the knife here, FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams, who picked them as a stealth Super Bowl pick. So I was wrong. Yeah. Wrong, but less wrong than Johnny. So that feels good to say, at least.
I was less wrong.
Less wrong than Johnny, yes. It's like the ugly hooker with the uglier parrot on her shoulder, right? That's kind of what that is. You know, makes me look a little better with his Super Bowl pick. But again, no real surprises there in the North. Again, I picked the Lions to make it all the way to the NFC Championship game, and why can't they the way that it's going right now? Jared Goff, again, I never let go of that guy. I never thought he was the stiff that the rest of the world did, Sean McVay included.
Listen, if Jared Goff actually wins the Super Bowl with Detroit, I want FDH listeners to know that Rick is going to get, like, a tattoo of Goff's face with a Super Bowl champion moniker around it on his ass, because he has been a Goff guy for so long.
Yep.
This is that stock he bought that no matter how low it went, he held on, he doubled down.
Yeah.
And he kept buying more, believing that someday that stock was going to come out on top.
I will commit to that tattoo, by the way. I'll commit to that.
I mean, you can't find a bigger lover of golf than Rick Morris. It's unbelievable.
His face and the Super Bowl trophy on my ass. That is a commitment. I will make that. You got a guarantee out of me in real time here. Again, turn your head and cough for golf. I was saying it in the 2016 draft and have been saying it ever since. And, again, in the South, like I said, I picked Atlanta, but I said that they're all a bunch of, if the Chargers are Fugazi, they are complete Fugazi. Everybody in this division here, the Falcons, at least a multi-headed attack in the running game, you can at least say that. And Tampa Bay.
Interesting on those projections for playoffs I was telling you about. They've got Atlanta at 39% chance, but New Orleans at 71%.
That's really interesting. Well, when you look at this,
that must be a lot of second half schedule projection.
Well, and I think so. And when you look at Ritter at quarterback for the Falcons, again, looking at the numbers from Pro Football Reference, they're very, very, very advanced power rankings numbers, the SRS numbers. Atlanta sits at minus 4.1 because they're minus 4.5 offensively, and they're a positive 0.4 defensively. The Saints are the only team that is above water in the division. They're 1.4 overall, 0.2 offensively, 1.3 defensively. So the Saints, again, 1.4 in a division where the Falcons are minus 4.1. The Tampa Bay is minus 1.0, and Carolina is a whopping minus 8.1. Truly, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, and that is New Orleans right now, at least statistically. I thought that Seattle could give San Francisco a run for their money in the West. I will say that, I thought San Francisco had a few more holes defensively coming into the season than some people thought, and I think the Chase Young deal kind of bears that out as far as they thought there was some shoring up to do. And I was about to say that I was wrong about Brock Purdy. I'm still going to say I'm wrong, but again, the way that he's played the last couple of weeks, this whole thing, Kyle Shanahan just needs a game manager. It's the exception to the rule in today's NFL. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I'm still somebody that, again, in any sport, I'm not a believer in the outlier. And if Brock Purdy can be a consistent, great quarterback year in and year out, that would be something that is an anomaly, both in terms of his size and his arm and everything else. But, I mean, it's at least possible at this point. So Brock Purdy, even with a couple of weeks that have fallen off a bit, he's still proving me wrong.
Yeah, he's still a great story. Look, every quarterback goes through peaks and valleys, right?
Right.
And I think that, we may be just looking at the fact that, defensive coordinators are catching up with him now that he's getting close to a full season worth of work.
Right.
They've got enough film on him. They're looking at tendencies. And now, he's going to have to step up his game or he'll be relegated to the dustbin of history. The interesting thing, going back to the South, Carolina at 1-6 currently, and didn't Colin Cowherd pick them to win that division?
Yep.
Which I thought was bonkers at the time.
Right.
Here's one for you. Mm-hmm. Let's say Carolina bottoms out with two wins, and they're sitting there at the number one pick. Or do they not have it anymore? I was going to say, did they give it away to get Bryce Young?
I think so. I think Chicago's got it, actually.
I was going to say, because if they have the number one pick, do they take Do they take May out of Carolina?
Oh,
do they give up? Do they give up on Bryce Young?
Take
the local guy.
I know you're a UNC honk, Chris, but if they give up on him for anybody, it'll be Williams out of USC. It's not going to be May.
And you are right. It's got to be Chicago has the pick.
Yeah.
So that's a moot point. I was just sitting here thinking about it going, well, now, wait a minute. They got a guy sitting there that's coming out that a lot of people think as the season rolls along, his stock is rising. And would he go ahead of Caleb Williams?
Well, and it's a thing, too, where, again, Williams going to Chicago would make sense, even though there's only a certain amount of this I think you can lay at Justin Fields' feet. The coaching and the rest of the roster and everything like that is very much at fault. And I said coming into the year that they didn't have a strong enough running game to properly complement Justin Fields. I've been proved right about that. But, again, Williams is one of these guys where, again, I am not a fan of taking a guy if you've already got a guy, but they're at a position. But there are few teams in the league, I think, where I would advocate passing on Williams or trading out of the position. It's one of these things where in talking to FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu about basketball, as I do quite a lot on and off the air, like in the NBA, right? Like if you already had a center, I mean, unless it's somebody like Embiid, and maybe even if it is somebody like Embiid, you're still taking Wemby with the first pick this past year. I mean, the NBA is different, right? Because you've got like one or two or three real potential franchise guys in a lot of these drafts. Sometimes not even that. But like if the unicorn is there, you take them. And that's what I think Williams is. Much like Trevor Lawrence a couple of years ago, much like Andrew Luck before that. So I think, yeah, I mean, if it's the Bears, it's a no-brainer. They're going to take him. And probably with a new coaching regime in front office, which is the fresh start he deserves, because the guys, this is one of another bunch of, you know, another failed regime in Chicago, like so many have been before it. But to me, that's what Williams is, Chris. He's that guy where, I mean, unless you have Mahomes or a tiny handful of guys like that, and by the way, if you have Mahomes, you're not going to be in line to get the first pick. Unless you have a tiny handful of quarterbacks in this league, you're taking Williams in that spot, I believe.
Yeah, no, and not to get us off on a draft tangent, because there'll be plenty of time for that.
Sure.
But no, it makes sense. I mean, you know, we know the squads out there that even if they have a young quarterback they've recently drafted, they, you know, you're going to have to make a quick decision. You know, I mean, your Arizona, your Chicago, you know, other people that are going to need, you know, L.A., Tampa Bay, they're not going to be high enough, right?
But mm-hmm.
Green Bay, right? I mean, Green Bay may start to tank out, right? I mean, they're not looking great.
Yeah.
You know, they're sitting at 2-5 right now. You know, they are definitely, you know, looking like they could be in the top five and in play for one of these top quarterbacks when it's all said and done, if they continue on their current trajectory. So, you know, to your point, I mean, we know who it is that needs to give up on that quarterback. I mean, look, this, you know, there's a changing of the guard coming, right? I mean, not to jump ahead on listeners, but, you know, Washington, Giants, Minnesota, Green Bay, Chicago, Atlanta, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Seattle, despite Geno, the Rams, Stafford is not getting younger, Arizona, those teams all could be looking at quarterback in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
New England, the Jets, you know, Pittsburgh, Tennessee potentially, you know,
Vegas,
Denver. So we think of the league as like stock full of quarterbacks, but I just named, 60% of the league?
Yeah, basically.
Probably in the next 2 years?
Yeah.
Really is going to be looking at it for a new quarterback?
Yeah.
Either because the guys that they thought were going to be it weren't it, or the guys that used to be it aren't it anymore because they're old. So it's like Rodgers retires.
Right.
Wilson's finally done in Denver. I mean, there's 60% of the league in the next 2 years is going to need a quarterback.
Well, you know what? And I'm just going to say this, too, as we start to bring it around. Do you know what's an extinct species in the league right now? And I hadn't thought of this point until you mentioned it. An extinct species in the league is Mark Brunell. Because when he was there in Green Bay, okay, every August, right, you could tell this guy was going to be somebody if he got the opportunity. And then he goes to Jacksonville and he just cuts loose and becomes a star. You're talking about this. You mentioned probably about 60% of the league. And there's not one guy I can think of in the league that's like, yeah, but there's this backup with such and such team that could go be a real starter someplace else. That species doesn't exist today.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you're right. And I think a lot of that has to do with how teams have failed to develop backups.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that was Brett Favre. That was, you know, and there was a lot of guys that were like that.
Right.
Steve Young is another one. Mark Brunell. I mean, there were a lot of them. You know, there are a few guys out there that intrigue me around the league, but we don't feel like we know as much as I think like we used to, right? Like when we would look at these guys, and maybe that's a function because no one plays in preseason, no one, you know, it's like the backup gets no reps all week, so we never really see development. You know, I don't know. It's like, on the one hand, the quarterback play doesn't seem like it's ever been better, but it also, in some ways, that as a collective, hasn't been worse, right?
You know, well, and that's an interesting point, though. And if you're saying, and you might be right, that we just don't know as much about these guys, that blows my mind, because Mark Brunell, that was essentially pre-internet age, mid to late 90s. And yet we all felt like we knew enough about the guy, like, man, if that guy just goes somewhere, and I don't remember if it was the expansion draft, I think it was. He went there. And it's just like, you would think today, right? Because it's like, it's hard for anything to be under the radar today with the internet and social media and everything like that. So it's like, you would think if there's this great sleeper on somebody's roster, we'd all be talking about him. And that just doesn't exist.
No, I mean, I can't disagree with you by and large. I mean, you're right. There isn't some great sleeper. I mean, you know, if he wasn't on Cleveland, and I know he had a bad game, but I mean, I was always intrigued by DTR coming out of UCLA.
Sure.
Because he played a lot of football. You know, I mean, second hardest thrower in terms of velocity of football in the last like 14 years, second only to Mahomes, DTR.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, like there was a trace there that I kept being intrigued by. Like this guy could be a, you know, a mid-round steal for some team. And then, of course, the Browns took him, and I was like, whoa. But, you know, but again, we don't know anything, right? What we saw of him was a guy who did not practice all week, and then at 10:30 before he played the Ravens was told he was starting.
Right.
Well, and so he looked accordingly. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, you're right, because our backups are guys like Taylor Heineke, like in Atlanta, right?
Right.
Like, I think Atlanta would be winning more games right now if they started him.
Maybe.
But we know what he is, right?
Like, right.
You know, he's a guy that can win you some games. Gardner Minshew, he's a guy that can win you some games, but he's not taking over a franchise.
Yeah, Case
Keenum. So, I mean, I agree with your point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, yeah, we have a league of a lot of guys like that are backups, and it's like, yeah, he can win you a game or two, yeah, you know, in a short stint. But, you know, cherry picking that roster as your starter, you know, elsewhere, you know, that's, you know, I mean, forever and a day, that's what everybody thought Garoppolo was, right?
Right.
You know, was like, oh, everyone wanted Garoppolo. You know, he was the guy, right? And even Belichick wanted him. He wanted to get rid of Brady.
Sure.
And now that's been proven to, you know, not be the case.
Oh, exactly. I mean, about as good as it gets right now is probably, I would say, in Miami, because with Mike White being there, like, if Tua went down tomorrow, I think they'd still make the playoffs with the rest of that offense, but they're not a Super Bowl team anymore, versus they can be a Super Bowl team if they have Tua. So that kind of illustrates our point, that there's like nobody.
Well, the other guy I was going to throw out there, you threw him out. The guy I was going to say who went, what, 5-1 last year or 5-0, Cooper Rush in Dallas.
Sure.
You know, a guy who has been around now a while.
Right.
Out of Central Michigan, when he got his chance last year, did well. Looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's the guy where you go, oh, all right. Like, that may be a guy.
Maybe. But it's like...
Well, yeah, maybe. Exactly right.
And that's the thing. Like, when I say that Mark Brunell doesn't exist anymore, it's like most of the guys we're talking about, their ceiling seems to be short-term patch, or we can get you 75 to 80% as far as you were going to go with the other guy. And if you're a Super Bowl contender, that means you're not going to the Super Bowl with that guy. So... You know, that's an interesting comment here on the state of affairs with the NFL. And again, looks to be a good quarterback class coming out next year and potentially the year after. But, I mean, nothing revolutionary, nothing that's going to fill all of these spots at one point in time. So, yeah, there's still going to be issues here in a lot of places. And with the quarterback spot being so central, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning of the year here. I'm not going to change the pick that I made preseason here of Philadelphia over Kansas City in the Super Bowl, just because, like I said, Kansas City has looked a little bit shakier offensively, largely because of their shite wide receiving core, but they're going to have the softest schedule of any of the AFC contenders the rest of the way here, with all the divisional games that they've got, so I'm going to pick them to come out of the
AFC.
I mean,
right now, head-to-head, I would take Miami, but I'm with you. I mean, you and I had the same prediction.
Yeah.
It was Philly over Kansas City. So yeah. I'm not prepared to change that either, although right now I find like I feel like Miami might be the better choice there right now.
Could be. Could be. And the game in Frankfurt this week, again, welcome to the year 2023 when we're talking about one of the most impactful NFL matchups in recent memory will be taking place in Frankfurt, Germany this week. But it is the case, a potential AFC Championship preview of Miami and Kansas City Sunday morning. So that will be
pretty wild stuff, I'll tell you that.
It is. And those fans there, and it was funny to see Valdez Scantling bitching about it. Oh, this sucks that we got to go over there. But it's like, well, the guy wouldn't be making his overpriced salary if it wasn't for the overseas markets and everything like that, helping to inflate the salary of a bum like him. So, you know, that's where the money comes from, Chris. You know, it's like, you don't get to bitch about it when you're a beneficiary of where the money comes from. So,
well, it's, yeah, that's like Buckeye fan complaining about their game against, you know, Rutgers or whoever being on the Peacock. It's like, all that money came from somewhere, guys.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to play some streaming games you don't care for because they're giving you a lot of money.
Yep, that was a point I was making. I was trolling a lot of Buckeye fans the last time they were on Peacock, and everyone was acting like it was a violation of the birthright of everyone in the state of Ohio that happened. And I'm like, you know, not to age myself, but it was like when I was a tiny, tiny little kid, I remember it was like 11 o'clock on a Saturday night, I think the local PBS station, they would have like it was either a half hour or an hour of highlights. And up until the 80s, that was all anybody, and maybe the mid-80s, that was all that you would ever see of Ohio State on a given week. Talk about a bunch of spoiled brats, Chris.
Well, that's that. The mediated realities of entertainment today has led a lot of people to forget what it used to be like.
Exactly. But on this show, Pepperidge Farm always members. And, you know, we will always trot these things out here. So,
of course, I would point out to you, you could have driven to Columbus and bought a ticket for $3.
Oh, that's true. And, you know, we'll have to see how the rest of the season plays out. But, again, a lot of excitement here in the first half of the season. There will be, as we go along, we'll catch up with you again here subsequently talking NFL. Thank you very much for being here for our pre-mid-season analysis, Chris Galloway.
Hey, that was fun. I look forward to doing it again with you soon.
That was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot, buddy. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1669.